Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Muppet Show!
It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, Hero Clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm John Clark. We're talking over like Fozzie telling a joke.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed that the Muppets aren't here. Like, Fozzie isn't our co-host.
How do you know? We didn't introduce everybody yet.
Oh, wait. Yeah, we didn't.
All right, let's introduce you. I'm John Clark.
Steven Brown.
And I'm full of Browns today, because we have Lisa Brown is back.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And first time David Brown is here.
Yes. The youngest of Browns.
The baby Brown.
Is he the youngest?
He's the youngest.
I am the tallest.
You guys all have this, like, youthful face. I assume you were just, like, quintuplets.
Yeah, you know, but Dave Gonzalez at the shop, he wouldn't believe me that you and me are not twins.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like, you and Lisa are twins, right? I'm like, no, she's like 3 years older than me. He's like, no, you guys are like twins. So you're like, you're twins. I'm like, no, for real. He's like, she's way older than me. And he's just like, no, dude, you're twins. Look at your faces. You're twins. I'm like, I agree that we look alike, but we are not twins.
Well, when I send people to your store that know me that don't know you, I always say, yeah, so let me know if my brother's there when you go in. Think me with a beard.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's
the first time I met you was I just came in the store and you were there and you were like, this is my sister. I was like, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Of course she
now,
is.
What is the order?
All right, so the order goes, Lisa's the oldest, followed by Michael, who probably will never
be on the show. Brown who's not here
Who's not on the show, followed by me, then David. Hey, what's up?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all the middle boy syndromes.
So as interesting it is to talk for an hour about the Brown family tree.
We do have a topic.
We do. We have a topic which was given away by the theme song. We're going to talk about the Muppets today.
Yeah,
Muppets. Which is great. And David has a... special acumen for being here to talk about Muppets.
Yeah, there's a reason
he's
here.
There is a reason other than my undying charm.
Right.
I was an intern for the Jim Henson Company.
Was that in New York or?
I was in New York. It's technically Long Island City in Queens.
I didn't know they were in Long Island City. I used to live like the next neighborhood.
They just moved there when I was interning.
That's where Sesame Street is still shot. Mm-hmm. It was very close to Captain Astoria.
It all makes sense.
Yeah. I was this close one time. I'm holding my fingers really close together. I was super close one time to actually seeing the Sesame Street set.
Oh.
Which is pretty wild because then he would have seen your buddy.
Yeah, remember a friend of ours, Wolf, who was in Puerto Rico with us, is a carpenter on Sesame Street.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was telling us the best stories, and it was crazy because it was 3 a.m. We're all really drunk, but there were still the sweetest stories ever. He's like, and then fucking Oscar comes out, and he's like, it's fucking Oscar. but that's awesome. How long were you there?
I was there for a semester.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was in 2009. Yeah, 2009.
Oh, so fairly recently.
Yeah,
that was around warehouse, right?
Yeah, they're now in a converted warehouse space. They were in the process of finishing the move when I started there, it's this converted warehouse space. It's really cool. So it's just this open floor plan. They've got a place. They've got a little kitchen, and then there's the Muppet Workshop, and in the puppet workshop, I guess, sort of gets hazy based on ownership of the Muppets.
Right.
Because they were sold to Disney.
Right, because Disney owns the Muppets, but Disney does not own the Sesame Street.
Right, yeah. So Disney owns Kermit and the gang, right. But anyway, so
which is why you don't see Kermit in a lot of the old Sesame Street DVDs anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, because that's legal. Nonsense.
That's bullshit.
Which you can also inform us on as well.
I can. But,
what do you do?
Because you spent years learning legal nonsense.
I spent years trying, certainly. but intellectual property isn't all that thrilling. Not nearly as thrilling as the Muppets, at least.
No, but what I found was I took a trip to New York to see David, got to go to the warehouse, and there's this whole room. And it's all files and stuff. And David's like, come here, look at this. And it's this huge book. It's huge, like the size of an omnibus. And it's got a picture of like Kermit on the front. And it says Frog versus Mouse. And it was all of the legal proceedings bound in a hardcover.
Yeah, because there was back when it was before the sale had been final of the Muppets over to Disney. there was an issue where, you know, the ride in MGM, the
Mr. Toad is in Fantasy, or was in Fantasy. But wasn't Kermit the Frog in that ride, like in a picture or something?
He might have made a cameo, but this dealt with the Muppet Vision 3D, where, you know, that was done by Jim Henson. He was still alive when he, you know, helped, you know, put that all together. And so what had happened is they hadn't made an agreement on merchandising and leasing the characters or using the characters for merchandise. And Disney was selling, you know, t-shirts and stuffed animals and stuff that were had Kermit and Piggy on them. And Jim Henson was like, what are you guys doing?
That's super illegal.
You're kind of infringing on my copyrights here and the trademarks. And so there's a whole dispute over it. And the Jim Henson Archives has all of those documents bound, as Lisa was saying, in this big book. It's this giant volume, and it's green leather. It's really fancy.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just read the new biography on Jim Henson, which was phenomenal.
I keep meaning to pick that up.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm really upset that I
had it on audiobook, so I was listening to it in the car. And the audiobook is actually really good if you go to
is
iTunes.
Is this something you own?
No, I own the file, but it's in my iTunes file, so...
So, yeah, you got to use the username and all
that. I would, you know, if I had it on the shelf, I would absolutely give it to you, but it's great. But they talk a lot about that was... Henson was trying to sell the Muppets to Disney right before he died. And mm-hmm. He said in the book, they said another big thing of that was Disney kept trying to get Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he said, that's a deal breaker. It's PBS. I do not want these made for profit. I want Children's Television Workshop to have control of that. And I do not want you getting into Sesame Street. And
Smart move. Just
kept coming back. And that was the reason in the book, it says that's the reason it broke down the first time.
Yeah.
And it would be another 10 years before the sale went through, and by that point,
right, because it didn't happen. It was Brian Henson, because Jim had passed away.
But he
was always adamant about protecting Sesame Street and keeping it separate. It was a interesting legal proceeding.
I don't know much about the Jim Henson stuff. John, what was the name of... He had like a screenplay for something that never got released. It was supposed to be like some big fantasy thing. It was just in previews. There was like a hardcover for it that they took all the storyboards and all the art and stuff for this. It's like original Jim Henson drawings and all this really cool stuff. He had like some crazy fantasy...
He was always pitching weird stuff. When Sesame Street started, he was more interested in the short films... Then he wasn't doing the Muppets. The Muppets was kind of a way to get him in.
What was that exhibit we saw? Didn't we see that?
Was Jim Henson's Fantastic World. I forget what it's actually called, but it's interesting. I feel bad that I don't, because my boss, when I worked at Jim Henson, she put that exhibit together, Karen Falk.
She's an awesome exhibit.
She's the archivist.
That's the one with the Field Museum. Science and Industry. We went to that. That was amazing.
Drawings and everything was awesome.
And they had the original Ernie and Bert. I didn't realize how huge those puppets were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They looked very hard to hold.
Funny enough, I was at the Smithsonian a couple weeks ago, and they had Miss Piggy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I hear, don't they have the original Kermit as well? They kind of rotate who's on display.
So they have one of the original Kermits. Interesting thing about Kermit, the original Kermit puppet was made out of Jim Henson's mother's raincoat, I believe, and his eyes were ping pong balls.
Yeah. I think they still utilize ping pong balls. I was listening to the Nerdist podcast because they had Brian Henson on.
Yeah, that was really good.
And he was talking how Jim would make these puppets, like the original, and then when he was done filming them, he would just give them to Brian and the other kids, and these puppets ended up in their sandbox and like totally trashed. And he said he was kind of talking about the process of maintaining that the felt will fall apart, and you know, they have to use all these materials.
The foam just disintegrates.
Yeah.
He told a really interesting story about the Dark Crystal puppets. Is how I think it was
fuck
Jen.
That movie.
Jen, we can get into that for a long time.
We won't.
But where the inside of the foam rots first because the paint is holding it together.
Yeah.
So the puppet looks fine for a long time, and then it just collapses.
And he says you open it and it's dust. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. But that was something that when I found that out when I was a kid, and that kind of broke my heart. But then I realized that Henson didn't really care about the puppets all that much. They weren't made to last. They were made to look just good in that shot, mm-hmm. and then be thrown away. They were pretty cheap materials. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there would be like 20 Kermits during the Muppet Show.
Right,
and be like, oh, this one fell apart. Give me another one. Like the same way there's like 5 Batmobiles when they make a Batman movie.
Yeah, and I mean, that's still true today. So when I was working at Henson, the company still made the puppets for Sesame Street. And so, you know, the one day I would walk in and you see a couple Big Bird puppets hanging out. And it's like, oh, hey, check it.
Yeah, I think when I was there, I saw an Elmo. And I wasn't that excited because, like, I'm not that big on Elmo. Like, whatever. But I was like, oh, like, I was hoping to see someone else.
Somebody cool.
I mean, but I did, the one cool thing I did see there, this is probably, do you guys remember from the original Sesame Street, they had the King of Eight? Was it King of Eight?
Yeah, and that was a Henson.
Yeah, they had.
I think he actually did the voice of the king.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and they just had found one of the princesses. And so it was just this princess sitting on a desk, like hanging out. And it was like princess number 4 or something, or 6. Yeah. And it just looked like a little, like a toilet paper roll. And it was like the coolest thing. I was like, oh my God, like that's the actual one. And he's like, yeah, they just kind of turned up here, you know, as they're unpacking.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they all said, kinds of cool stuff.
They say there's a closet in Letterman's building when it was the Ed Sullivan Show.
Where they painted the pipes.
Yep. They painted all. There's a picture of it in Jim Henson The Works.
What do you mean they painted the pipes?
They were on the Ed Sullivan Show that night, and they just kept getting bumped, and they had to hang out in their dressing room all day, so they got bored, and they found this closet full of pipes, so they just started painting it and making like Muppets out of the pipes.
Yeah, they like
through eyes and stuff. It's there to this day. David Letterman is in that studio. Now,
yeah,
that was the Ed Sullivan Theater, and they said if you go to a certain floor and you open a certain closet, you see these Muppet pipes.
That's awesome.
That's like, awesome.
No one ever changed it from that.
That's what I love about anything Jim Henson does. It's so just like pure joy. Like,
yeah,
for any age group, like little kids, adults, it's all
except for Dark Crystal.
No, I don't like Dark Crystal, and I don't like Labyrinth either.
Yeah, seriously, fuck that.
I like Labyrinth more than I like Dark Crystal.
Jim Henson's a monster.
I think that's the prevailing opinion. Jim Henson is not a monster. Well,
did you come into this podcast getting ready for this? Like, I'm going to wait for the right moment to
fuck
just...
it. Drop the Jim Henson monster bomb.
Drop the Jim Henson monster Muppet.
Right.
That's him.
He was behind Fraggle Rock. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, come on.
Fraggle Rock is great.
I would actually say, and I don't remember a lot of shit. There's like a black hole in my memory from like being a kid to where
I'm just
convinced I'm not the same person. But I remember Fraggle Rock more than I remember like the Muppets.
Well, I remember seeing the
Muppets, but we went to Fraggle Rock was like...
Fraggle Rock was on when we were kids.
Right.
And the Muppet Show, I think, had ended...
81, it ends.
Yeah, that was 2 years before I was born, so that had ended, so we never got to see that, only by, like, DVDs. So yeah, we had
that
Muppet
one video.
Tapes.
VHSs at the time.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
we
this,
had that fantastic VHS. That,
I have it still to this day.
It's because
it's
quality.
Do you have a VCR?
Yes, I have a double player.
She does this weird shit, and she's done this since we were kids, where it's like, she has this, like, foresight to, like, oh, we're gonna need a VCR one day. So she'll, like, take a good VCR and, like, put it in a trash bag and stick it in the crawl space. Like,
I've never done anything like that. I saved
stuff.
Yeah,
you did. No, she went out September 12th and bought like 16 newspapers and put them in a bin.
Oh, that
and
I did.
It's just
that
like, who thinks of shit like that? I would never think.
Grandma taught
to
me
that.
To do that.
Well, I'm just saying, it's smart.
I'm preserving history. Preserving our personal history. So I saved. I have like some of our old. I have some of my old T-shirts when I was a kid, like an Ultimate Warrior T-shirt.
Yeah, mine never lasted.
I had like all. I saved all our VHS, the ones that we like wore down that you can't see. So like Batman 89, I have on. VHS.
I had that
with
VHS.
That old like Pepsi Cola commercial.
Yes,
that was the best.
Like, Alfred's on the phone with him.
Yep.
Like, but then like the Coca Cola bottle
has
like, a bad
cape. Yes,
like, what the fuck?
Yes.
And like Bugs Bunny like paints a hat on Daffy Duck's head.
Oh, Bugs Bunny! That was the Bugs greatest. Bunny and Daffy Duck are arguing about the catalog.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what they wanted you to order the catalog.
Yep.
I bought that. It literally takes about 12 seconds to turn any podcast into a Batman podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I bought that. I remember that was the first movie I ever bought. I'm in high school when that came out. And I remember going into Sam Goody's, which existed.
I remember Sam Goody's.
And
I had
the one that was on the display, like the one that was on the cash register, like available now. I walked in, my friend was with me, and I grabbed it off the register and I went, this
one.
Yeah, so what I did was I saved this Muppet tape, and it was, I don't think it was the Muppet Show. It was, like, just made for VHS, I'm assuming.
But there
and
it was the Muppet Show. Too. I think it was, because it was, like... It
all
was
I remember is the
musical numbers.
Acts.
They were musical numbers from, like, many of the famous guests. So there
right.
was Cher was on it.
I don't remember Cher.
It was the In His Kiss, was that the
Oh,
one?
That's right. So it had Leo Sawyer, Alice Cooper, Linda Ronstadt, Ben Vereen, like all these.
All of those hosted the Muppet Show, so it was probably
it was a compilation tape of them singing. So like one of my favorite Muppet moments is like Alice Cooper singing Welcome to My Nightmare with like Dr. Teeth, you know. And
that's what kills me is that I do not understand why Disney hasn't finished putting the Muppet Show on DVD. Because it ran 5 seasons. They put out the first 3 seasons. They sold great. I see them in Toys R Us and Target today. Mm-hmm. But season 3 came out in 2008. They have not put out season 4 or 5 in 6 years. And in those 6 years, they made 2 new fucking movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they still haven't put these DVDs. And they talk about the music rights are expensive because they would do 10 songs an episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's like if the Muppet, well, I guess it's not Sesame Street. I was going to say like, oh, the Muppets, they should just like cut those guys like a deal. It's like it's educational, but I'm thinking of like
Sesame Street. This is just Disney itself. This is Disney having to go to Warner Brothers and, you know, and Arista and like every record company and go, hey, we got an Elton John song and a Meat Loaf song and a song from Saturday Night Fever in this episode. How much is that going to cost? And they're like, nah, $150,000. They're like,
And especially because it's Disney, they're going to.
Yeah, because Disney pays
for it. They know they've got the money to.
Yeah, because so they're like, oh, we're going to shoot this up.
Disney's paying billions of dollars for other franchises, so nobody's going to lowball them.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I do find it amazing that they can't seem to think it's going to make a profit after they clear the music rights when they've gotten a whole new generation into it.
And they've, I mean, that show went out and it was like number one on like ratings and stuff. Like Jim wanted it to go out on top. He didn't want it to kind of tank. So, I mean, their ratings were off the charts.
Once he made the Muppet movie, he was like, you know what? I just want to make movies. And he fulfilled his contract. And they immediately made the Muppet Caper right after the Muppet Show. So it wasn't a matter of these characters have run out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Muppet movie came out in the middle of the run of the Muppet Show. And then as soon as he ended it, he started making that. And then as soon as they did that after Dark Crystal, which
he was
immediately fucking eyes. We can talk about that for a very long time. They immediately went to Muppets Take Manhattan. So the Muppets, there was this period. I'm the oldest guy in the room, and I remember the Muppet Show starting because I was into Sesame Street like at an early age. It started about 3 years before I was born, so I grew up with it. And my mom said my first word was Ernie. I had the original Fisher Price Sesame Street with, you know, when the Fisher Price dolls were just those cylinders that you could drop in. Yep. I had the Sesame Street and the alley in between the two buildings was a chalkboard that you could write on. And I loved it. So when the Muppet Show started, I remember watching it. And I was super into the Muppet Show. And there was a period from like the late 70s to the early 80s where the Muppets were just everywhere. It was like Muppets and Star Wars were pretty much the entire pop culture.
Yeah, for those years. I think when we were kids, I think the first thing I remember from the Muppets is like the Muppet Babies cartoon. You guys remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, and I was a little older for Muppet Babies and Fraggle Rock, and that was around the time that I was like, I guess I shouldn't be into this stuff. But anytime the Muppets did something, they were the characters I was already into. I remember watching the Muppet Family Christmas, which is my favorite Christmas special ever. I remember watching that in high school, and I was like, I don't care who knows how much. Did you ever see the Muppet Family Christmas?
No, I've never seen the
Christmas Carol.
The Christmas Carol was a feature film, but the Muppet Family Christmas was a TV special, and I have the DVD. The DVD's way out of print. In fact, they went in and cut songs out of that DVD because they couldn't get the rights.
That's nice.
But the premise was all the Muppets – this is like 87, so the show's been off for a while. Like even Muppets Take Manhattan was a few years ago. But the idea is that all the Muppets are going to Fozzie's mom's house, who's Fozzie in a wig, for Christmas. And but there's a problem because she was going to go to Malibu, so she's letting Doc and Sprocket sublet her house. And then all the Muppets show up, so they have to stay together. And then they go down to the basement, and they find there's a Fraggle hole in the basement, and they teach the Fraggles about Christmas.
Oh, cool.
And then, for no reason at all, Kermit looks out the window and goes, oh, look, all the Sesame Street Muppets are here. And every single fucking Muppet
that's awesome
is in a living room singing Christmas carols.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's next Christmas I will show it to all of you.
Awesome.
It's one of my favorite specials ever. And because those characters I just had a real bond with and still do.
And I mean, that's interesting because usually there was never much crossover between the Muppets, Kermit and the gang, and Sesame Street.
I think Kermit, I saw Kermit.
Kermit
on
was
Sesame.
The only typical crossover. Yeah. Usually, like Miss Piggy didn't often show up on like Sesame
every
Street.
Every now and then, very rarely, you would have the Sesame Street Muppets would show up on the Muppet Show. I remember like Ernie and Bert showing up, and Cookie Monster. There was, I think, in the Marty Feldman episode, they said it was a standard when they got a guest. It was a standard question as they were writing the show. It was like, oh, who's the Muppet you most like? We'll write scenes with you. And he said, I like Cookie Monster. He goes, oh no, Cookie Monster's not on the show. He goes, but I like Cookie Monster. And you know, it's the Muppets. The Frank Oz is there.
Yeah.
there's a box. And right. This is something I learned in the book that I never knew. I always wondered, you know, the Muppet Show was made in England. So I was like, how did they keep doing Sesame Street, which is made in New York? And they would take 1 week, like every month, or like 2 weeks every 6 months, they would take a break from the Muppet Show, throw up the Sesame Street sets, and just do Ernie and Bert and Grover and Fat Blue and like and all their characters. So they had all the Sesame Street Muppets in England.
Yeah.
And then they would just send the tapes back over to New York, and New York just had the street with Big Bird and Oscar, and Carol Spinney stayed in New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, talking back to like when you were saying about crossovers, is like, you know, we didn't see, I don't know about you guys, but like me and Michael didn't see Star Wars until we were like in like eighth grade or freshman or something. Like it took us a minute to get to Star Wars. But I remember knowing all the Star Wars characters from Muppet Babies, the cartoon. Huh. They would, like, show up all the time. How did they... Isn't that two different companies? Like, Lucas and the Muppets, like, how do they even do that?
They would have clips.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's... Part of it, I mean, just from, like, a legal standpoint, it could be just considered a parody.
But did they have actual clips? Or was it, like, cartoons of Darth Vader?
They would have clips, but they were very, very short.
Yeah.
Very short clips. If there are actual clips, like, a 20 cent,
need, you know...
I'm sure they had, like, a Fox, you know, license.
Yeah.
Like, just... In the credits was like Star Wars owned by, or you know what? Star Wars is owned by, Lucasfilm was never owned by Fox. And Lucas and Henson worked together on Labyrinth.
Oh,
and that was
go.
Around that time.
So maybe that's
And actually
why
they were friends.
They
you know,
probably worked out an agreement between
Yeah, Frank
themselves.
Oz was Frank Oz has always been Yoda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's one of my favorite episodes of The Muppet Show was when Mark Hamill hosted The Muppet Show, and they just had Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew, and Kenny Baker. And so it's Luke, Chewie, C-3PO, and R2-D2 on The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
Which is in the DVD season sets.
They couldn't get Harrison Ford.
It's my. They probably asked him and he went,
I'm not doing the fucking Muppets. I'm flying helicopters.
And I remember,
I'm Indiana Jones.
I remember at the time, it's like 79. And I think it's probably when they were shooting Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I'm sure like Jim Henson and Frank Oz were on the set because Lucas wanted Henson to play Yoda, and he said no, I'm too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he said I'm too busy.
Yeah,
he said I'll help design the puppet. He's like, but use Frank. Frank's a better performer than me anyway.
Yeah,
and that's why Frank Oz did Yoda, and that's why he sounds like Grover for the first 10 minutes of Empire Strikes Back,
right. And a little bit like Miss Piggy every now and then.
Yeah, a little bit,
a little bit of Piggy.
I love that when it leaks through.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's one of the greatest things I wanted to bring up when I was in the, you know, the, what's the official term for, like, the warehouse? Like, the puppet shop or?
The workshop.
Yeah, the place in the workshop. All right.
You're
so
in the workshop.
David was there. He was doing a history internship. And so he was working in the archives. So he had access to, like, this huge room with all these files. And so I just met him up there, you know, for a couple hours and just kind of walking around. And in this room, I remember they were the original character descriptions for all of the Muppets. And so he was like showing me like, oh, you got to read this person's. And it was like animal. And they weren't like G-rated. They were more like PG-13 in a, because you could just tell like Jim and Frank just sat around like bullshitting and like created these characters. So like animal was like a wild, like crazy, like woman crazed, like, and I think they got away from that now, like how he is. You don't hear him screaming like woman like he used to.
Mm-hmm.
But like some of those character descriptions were just hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
the end of Great Muppet Caper. He takes all the hench girls and just chases them around the museum.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, just some of the characters watching how they develop, like Cookie Monster, for example, started in commercials.
Yeah,
and he had green. Teeth. He was so originally he was purple, and it was for a, it was a Canadian cereal. He was purple, and it was like he was like the wheel stealer or something. And then he did a Frito-Lay commercial where he was green. Then he was on IBM. Is an IBM commercial, and he was green then too.
One.
Yeah,
and then they got rid of his teeth. They made him blue, and then he was Cookie Monster. And Cookie Monster is my favorite Muppet, in fact.
I do. Yeah. Cookie Monster is my favorite Sesame Street Muppet, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Without a doubt. Cookie Monster is the best.
Yeah, Cookie Monster is
he
awesome.
Was Cookie Monster for Halloween one year. We did, like, what was the theme?
Monsters.
The theme was monsters.
Yeah, yeah, we do, like, a theme party every year. You know, the Shiny, we did the last one. And David made this, like, awesome, I think it was the same year you did the internship, right?
No, I was in law school when I made that one.
It was, like, he just made this, like, kick-ass, like, Cookie Monster puppet, and it looked like he stole it from the fucking warehouse.
Were you awesome. Using it as a puppet, or you were?
I was using it as a puppet. I made it.
So he would
puppet.
Wear, like, all black, you know, with, like, long sleeves, and then, like, just have this, like, Cookie Monster thing, and it had, like, the googly eyes, and, like, it was awesome.
And he had, like, a tray of cookies, so he was, like, hiding behind the island in the kitchen, like doing
that's awesome.
The whole setup. Yeah,
he had like
yeah.
one hand, right? He only had like one hand.
Well, yeah, so I had the one hand as the glove, which is how they do it, and then the other hand is in the mouth. And so, unlike the way they ended up advancing the Cookie Monster puppet, they used to have a tube in Cookie Monster's mouth where they could like put
force food the cookies
or,
down.
Yeah, like, or get it to go away. I mean, now I don't think they do it anymore because I think, you know, last time I watched Sesame Street and saw a clip with Cookie Monster, he sort of just takes them and smashes them all into his mouth and they fall out
just,
of it. Of
course. Yeah, basically just every
they just crumble.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's basically what I did for that whole night. I was just shoving cookies.
It's funny. One Halloween I went as Jim Henson and I grew my beard out for the month. I wore like a denim jacket and a headband and then I took a Kermit the Frog doll that we had. And slit the seam, pulled all the stuffing out, and basically once the doll had no stuffing, then it was a puppet.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
No,
that's cool.
And it was really good. And it was like, and I took it to work because we had like a work party, and it was like a crazy work party where everybody got really wasted, and everybody had to try on Kermit.
Oh, cool.
But there was also a moment I'm trying out the costume, and I'm like, I'm seeing how it works. I'm seeing if I can get it to work if the doll's too stiff or something. And so I get behind the couch. And I just have him sitting on the couch and Renee walks in and I go, hi, Renee. And she just like flushes. She's like, hi, Kermit.
She didn't know what you were doing?
Like, no, she knew it. She knew it was me.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I was like, did you know? She's like, no, I knew it was you, but Kermit started talking to me. And there's that touchstone. I read this great article on, I think it was Salon, about Generation X and, I'm a part of Generation X. I know you guys are more Gen Y and millennials, but it was about how that we shouldn't be called Generation X or the Kurt Cobain generation. We should be called the Muppet generation because, as I was saying, that late 70s, early 80s.
They were everywhere.
And they were everywhere and they got you so young and in such a positive way. You know, it wasn't like, I mean, there are other things I love, like Looney Tunes that I watched early or Batman, but they created this environment when you're like 2, 3 that just goes, look, everything's okay. And hey, let's talk about the letters and the numbers and let's talk about being nice to people.
Yeah.
And they still have that attitude.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things I love. They haven't been like, they haven't sold out. They're not like corrupted. You never hear, you know, really bad press about them. You know, it's
well, corrupted is a great word because obviously they've done big things that, You could say they sold out in a way where it's like, oh, we're making new movies with Ricky Gervais now. Some people might see that as like, oh, that's not pure. But you know, they were a variety show that had.
But they've always
Elky
used
Summer on.
Celebrities, yeah.
Right? But yeah. They've always maintained that integrity, even being sold to Disney. They've never completely watered down.
Didn't they do something where like Cookie Monster was like, they're like, oh, he can't eat cookies because it leads to like childhood obesity.
Yeah,
yeah. And actually it's funny because so then everyone, you know, there were people that were in uproar about that. And they were like, well, you can't call him Cookie Monster if he doesn't eat cookies. And they actually addressed it in an episode. They had Matt Lauer come on and it showed Cookie like sitting and he was like starting to eat like some vegetables or something. And then, like, Matt Lauer comes out and he's like, breaking news, blah, blah, blah. And he starts, like, giving this, you know, breaking news report. And then Cookie Monster kind of, like, looks around at him. He's like, who this guy? And then it's this whole, and then he addresses it and says, like, hey, look, I eat them sometimes. And then he ends by, I think, eating Matt Lauer's microphone, which is pretty good.
Yeah, because I remember
there was
eating
a song,
microphones
they,
all
they
the
wrote
time.
A song. He
reads everything.
That was the first joke I ever wrote in stand-up.
What's that?
When it was in the news. It was my very first time I ever did stand-up. The joke that worked the best was, did you hear they won't let Cookie Monster eat cookies anymore because he sets a bad example? I saw Cookie Monster eat a phone once.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that good an example of the American diet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he eats quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Joke always worked. Then I went into a minute-long act out of, like, Cookie Monster slowly getting fired.
Oh,
it was very sad.
Yeah, but I think it's just their sense of humor is always like good, wholesome fun, you know. And I think they managed to walk this line where you can appeal to kids and keep kids interested, but also make it interesting for the parents. They've always had celebrities come on, so like people that argue that they're, you know, it's a sellout to have like Ricky Gervais. Well, what the hell were they doing with Steve Martin then?
Right.
I mean, come on, like,
and they're at a point where they've been around so long that the celebrities they're getting grew up.
Yes. With,
and I mean, you know, like if they have Jon Stewart or Ricky Gervais or Tina Fey, and Tina Fey's been on a lot because not only she has a big role in Muppets Most Wanted, but I've seen her on Sesame Street like three or four times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sesame Street has been around for, I think they're
1969
is when it started. I mean, they have over 4,000 episodes. I think it's close to like 4,300, if not over.
And the best part is all the original are now instant streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
You can watch all original.
Because I saw like a compilation of a few.
But it said like original episodes. So I was like, mm-hmm.
Look into some of the classics.
I'm hoping it changed, but the last time I looked, it was like 12 episodes. I was like, it was like when they put out the old school DVDs. I was like, oh, these are season sets, and there were like 5 episodes.
Okay.
But it's still awesome. It's not like Saturday Night Live, where Netflix on Saturday Night Live literally has Saturday Night Live.
As far as like guest stars go on the Sesame Street, didn't they have like O.J. Simpson on before he was like really famous? You know what I mean?
I mean, well, like he was an airplane, and he was a legendary football player. So they have sports guys on all the time, which drives me crazy.
And I mean, recently they had like what? Benedict Cumberbatch was on.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch was on. Yeah.
Michelle Obama's been on
so
many times. You know, I mean, she addresses the healthy eating stuff.
Yeah.
Which is good. But I mean, they've always got, you know,
and it's just I feel like it's the easiest kids show to get celebrities on because it's been around so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, if these celebrities like grew up with it, they're more inclined to be like, oh, I fucking love fucking Sesame Street. I grew up watching that.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be.
Yeah, it's not like Yo Gabba Gabba, which is, you know, a couple of years old. We loved it when it's a hipster kid show.
Yeah.
When Ben was like one, he was obsessed with it, and I was like, the thing I liked about Yo Gabba Gabba was it was hipster, but it wasn't disaffected. Like a lot of kids shows, and I've seen a lot now. You know, my older son's 7, and my younger son is just starting to watch TV, so I've got at least another 5 years of kids shows. You could tell very quickly between what a kids show where they're really into doing the best show possible, and a kids show where nobody could make it in regular television, and they're just like,
phoning it in.
Yeah, yep. They're just like Transformers with puppies. I don't care. Right. I want to work. And Yo Gabba Gabba always seemed like, and while not as smart or as deep as the Muppets, it always seemed like they were super into making that show work. And they would have people like Elijah Wood and Jack Black and Biz Markie, and they would have like weird kind of more alt guys on that show.
Okay.
But Sesame Street, I think you could get anybody to be on. Like, I'm never surprised when I see somebody on Sesame Street. You know, if Robert Downey Jr. was on Sesame Street tomorrow, I'd be like, okay, cool.
There you go.
You know, because
I'd be surprised if he hadn't been on by now.
Yeah, at some point in his career.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, but there is that. Have you seen the Muppets and Muppets Most Wanted?
I saw Muppets Most Wanted, so I've seen.
Is
and
that
I
the
saw
one with Tina Fey?
That's the one with Tina Fey.
I didn't see that one.
I loved
one
it. It was
that.
Good.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed because some of my favorite characters didn't have bigger roles, so they went like
Pepe, didn't you say?
Yeah, Pepe has like one line and it's
the Swedish.
Two words.
Yeah, Pepe.
Swedish Chef wasn't in it. I think he had like a small cameo.
I think he had a cameo.
To me, it focused on like the classic Muppets, like Kermit and the Gang, and some of my favorite are kind of more. I think they were created later, so
like the Muppets Tonight characters.
Yeah. So I'm big into like Sam the Eagle, the Swedish Chef, Pepe. Yeah. Rizzo was there, but I don't know if he had a line.
I always hated that fucking rat.
I don't really like Rizzo, but he does make some good jokes.
Well, they got to a point. Rizzo was one of the later performers that they hired, Steve Whitmire, who is now Kermit after Jim Henson died. That was like his character. So it was so to make sure, I've noticed the groupings of the Muppets, they try to make sure every performer has a character in there. And Frank Oz is both Piggy and Fozzie, so you never see Piggy and Fozzie together. You know, each one of them bounces off of Kermit. So when Steve Whitmire came in, he created that character. So all of a sudden, that character was in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't really see him in Muppet. He's not a Muppet movie. And in Great Muppet Caper, there's a bunch of rats. But then, like, starting from Muppet Take Manhattan, he's in every. And
he had a big role in Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah, there's a while where, like, Gonzo and Rizzo were, like, the two
Muppets.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think they were
Muppet Carol.
Yeah, because I think they were the two guys left. because everyone else had retired or passed away. Yeah. It was like Dave Golez and Steve Whitmire were the only two original Muppet performers. So it was like, all right, your characters are now the big guys, and Kermit and Fozzie will be in the background. And since the Muppet, since the Jason Segel movie, it's been a real concerted effort to be like the Muppets from the Muppet Show.
Right, right.
Because it was, that movie was marketed brilliantly and totally worked and was a huge hit, which is why we had a second one so fast. Was it was aimed at my generation who now have kids.
Right.
And when we took Ben to the theater, Ben was the only kid in that theater who knew who all the characters were. And because once he got into Sesame Street, we were like, all right, here's the Muppet Show DVDs. Start putting them on. And all the other kids in his class didn't really know who the Muppets were, but they all loved that movie.
Yeah.
And that just, I'd never seen a movie jerk on the nostalgia strings so hard. That movie made me cry.
Yeah?
A bunch of times. Like when they all sing Rainbow Connection.
Yeah.
Actually, when the Muppet Show theme comes on, there was the moment where it's like, the Muppet Show is really happening again. Yeah. It was like the first time I saw Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and I'm like, Spider-Man is really swinging around the city.
Yeah.
Like you'd waited so long for that to happen.
Right.
Well, what is everybody's like favorite Muppet movie? Is it hard to pick, or do you have like a clear cut, this is my favorite Muppet movie?
I love The Muppet Caper.
Okay.
I love The Great Muppet Caper because I was like 9 when I saw that. I saw it in a double feature. And going back, I still really love it. And I think the thing I love the most about it is that the villain is Charles Grodin. And Charles Grodin was in everything in like the early 80s. And then in the 90s, he had like a talk show on like CNBC that was really weird. And then I hadn't seen him and he popped up on Louie. He's in like the last 3 episodes of Louie, and he's clearly like 75 years old. He's playing like an old man on Louie. But I love that, like, Charles Grodin was like the driest guy. He was in Albert Brooks' first movie, and he's just like, Miss Piggy. I love you, Miss Piggy, and I don't care who knows it. And Renee always, whenever we quote that movie, we always quote Charles Grodin. We never quote the Muppets. And every time I'm like, if I'm like leaning on her shoulder, I go right into her ear and go, thieves aren't breathing down your neck. What about you, Lisa?
Mine is definitely Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just our favorite because I loved Tim Curry and I just love the songs. Like, because that was Brian's first movie he directed, right?
Yeah, yes. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just love it. It's got the pirate thing, and I'm all about pirates. So, I mean, it kind of hit on multiple levels, and it had just some of the newer characters, you know, that aren't in some of the older shows, you know. So it's everything. Yeah, that's the best.
I think for me, Muppet Treasure Island is definitely up there, but I think Christmas Carol might edge it out just a little bit.
There's more Statler and Waldorf in Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I mean, how do you beat Marley and Marley?
And they're cool looking Muppets too. Like design they did for Statler and Waldorf is really, really awesome.
Yeah. So I think for me it's Muppet Christmas Carol. Also, how do you argue with Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge? Yeah. I mean,
anything. Yeah. Right. I saw the greatest clip of Michael Caine. If I can find it, I'll put it on the Facebook page. But somebody was interviewing Michael Caine and they said, do you know how many people do impressions of you? He goes,
oh, yeah. Yeah, he saw that.
He goes, everyone does an impression of me. I do an impression of me. He does this really bad impression of himself. Michael Caine. He's like, I'm Michael Caine. I talk through my bloody nose. which is why I think he's totally miscast as Alfred, and I love him as Alfred.
Yeah,
I didn't have a problem with him as Alfred.
That was one of the first things that Steve and I did in the show. That's when I started thinking we could do a show, was we talked to each other as Alfred one afternoon all day, and we would just go, and anytime somebody would bring it in, he goes, and it was the size of a tangerine.
Tangerine. Because it was good fun.
Steven, what's your favorite Muppet?
I gotta go with, I think, Muppet Treasure Island. I think I liked the Christmas one, but then I grew up and like hate Christmas. But like,
Do you like the Grinch?
Yeah, I like the Grinch until like that bullshit ending that's not real life.
Yeah,
where he's like, oh, he grew two sizes too big, and now he likes Christmas. Fuck that.
Yeah, I'm not buying that ending either.
I don't buy that bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's like, what was that? Your comedian buddy that was on a couple months ago. He had that joke
Mike
about
Lawrence?
Mike Lawrence had that joke about. Finding Nemo, and he turns it off 15 minutes before the movie ends because that's not how real life works.
That's a joke in a
Nemo
stand-up.
Got eaten.
It's the same kind of shit. But yeah, I would say Muppet Treasure Island, and I think a lot of it's like Tim Curry because he was in like Clue. He was the bad guy in Clue. He's the bad guy in Muppet Treasure Island. He was the bad guy in The Shadow.
Do you know
he's
he was the bad guy in everything?
Do you know he was the original Joker in Batman and the Animated Series?
No, I didn't.
No.
He did four episodes, and it just wasn't quite right.
Oh.
And then Mark Hamill came in to do like the corporate CEO in Heart of Ice in the Mr. Freeze episode.
Okay.
And then he's like, "Hey, who else you got?" And they're like, "Well, Joker, we're thinking of we're thinking of replacing Tim Curry." And he's like, "Oh, I'll try it."
Wow.
And then I just love Tim Curry.
Are those still Tim Curry is great. Yeah.
Are those still
I forgot he's in Home Alone 2.
Oh, yeah. Home Alone 2?
He has that awesome scene where, like, Macaulay Culkin is watching the Grinch on the limo, and then, like, the Grinch smiles, and then Tim Curry smiles, and it's like they almost, you know, they should have just done it side by side.
I just want to hug that man. Like, he can do no wrong.
He had a stroke last year.
Oh.
Is he still alive?
He had a massive stroke. Yes, he's still alive.
Oh, thank God. What would the world do without Tim Curry? Like,
someday we might have to find out.
Someday. It was the guy who did, he was in that Muppet movie, the other actor, and he was like, Tim. Like, who the hell was that?
Oh, what that is that guy's
Bill
name?
That was Bill Connolly.
Billy Connolly.
Billy Connolly is
who? He interacts with...
Billy Connolly is a great Scottish stand-up.
Yeah.
And
what else have I seen him in?
Spam a lot, isn't he? Isn't he?
I thought he
might have done Spam a lot. He was in Mrs. Brown was like his big role. He was in Lemony Snicket. He was really good in Lemony Snicket.
No, I didn't see that. Yeah,
He's done some good reality shows. He did one where he took Route 66 from the beginning to the end. He starts in Chicago.
My old man did that.
Really?
Yeah,
him and my uncle, they wanted to do that, and they like left. They did that, like 10 years ago, probably.
Yeah,
but they just took like old cars and like did the whole route.
They did it in a They might kill me if I get the year wrong. I think my uncle had a 66 Corvette. And they took the Corvette down old 66 and back. So my dad was taking pictures because he had his arm out the passenger side. So he got a dark tan on the way out, and then he didn't match. So he's like, I'll fix it on the way back.
Right.
Yeah, Billy Connolly does it on a motorcycle. But Billy Connolly was one of my first major moments in comedy. We went to see him in like a little theater on like the west side of New York. It was like 2000, I think. And he did like 2 hours. He does a lot of riffing. He does a lot of stand-up. And he had like a brain fart. And we're sitting in like the second row. And he's like, you go into a cave and you see those fucking things. What the fuck are those things? And I go, stalactites? He goes, yes! And he pointed right at me. And I was like, that's amazing. And then I turn and look next to me. Mark Maron sitting next to me.
Get out.
Yeah. He like just wanted to see Billy Connolly work.
Cool.
Awesome.
It was like, and that was one of those moments where I was like, I should do comedy.
Yeah,
was
he
Maron,
was
like a big deal at that time.
No, he was, but Maron
was like getting started.
Maron's been a stand-up since like late '80s, I think. So he was always around. Like, at that point, he would like host clip shows on Comedy Central, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I always liked him, and then he was on Air America in like the mid 2000s when that started, and that gave him radio experience to start the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Billy Connolly was great in that movie. I remember
When I was in England, if you ever want to hear him, when I was in England, I bought like 4 Billy Connolly CDs that they wouldn't release in the country of like hours of his stand-up.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's really cool. And it's harder to understand than in this country, because in this country you could tell he's like trying to he's trying to calm down his Scottish accent so Americans can understand him. But there's like some of these CDs sound like Groundskeeper Willie. He's like, I need to go to like Rover to come out. Everybody starts laughing, and we're like,
he went to England. David did a semester in Italy, and then he kind of did like a tour of like Europe. And then me, Lisa, and a friend of ours went to go like meet him in England. And the fucking first person we meet who is like with an English accent, we get in like the fucking cab, and the guy's like, all right, you going? And it's just like, what? Hey, you and it's just like, the fuck are you saying? Like, we speak the same language, and I don't know what the fuck you're saying. And it's just like, the hardest thing is like negotiating with like a taxi driver.
How much is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I had the same thing when I went to Ireland. And it was same time when I was studying abroad. And I go to Ireland, I was traveling with a friend, and she tells me, she's like, you know, she's like, I just want you to know that you have to speak for us while we're in Ireland. And I said, why? She's like, well, because my default now is to go to Italian. And she's like, and if I can't understand them, I'm just going to start speaking Italian. And I was like, well, that's weird. So the first place we stopped is a Starbucks, because we hadn't seen a Starbucks for months. We were like, yeah, let's just go get some Starbucks. We go in, and I go up, and I was like, hi, can I get, like, a tall hot chocolate? And the guy behind the counter goes, wow. And I was like, I'm sorry? And he goes, wow. And I kind of, like, lean over to Ayanna, and I kind of do a stage whisper. I'm like, what the heck is he saying? And she's like, I think he wants to know if you want it for here or to go.
Oh, I would assume whipped cream. Do you want whipped cream or whipped cream?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I couldn't tell.
Just say so yes. See what happens.
I look back at the guy, and it was sort of this very cautious, like, for here?
I mean, don't they?
There's a question.
And then it's all like, the drinks to go? Like,
not at this one. They had nice mugs.
Oh, they give
mugs.
You actually mugs.
They
gave
me a
oh,
nice mug.
Okay. Yeah.
The big problem in Ireland is that every now and then somebody will just start talking in Gaelic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we went to Trinity College, and I was going to take a picture of the tapestry, and the guard told me you're not allowed to take pictures in the museum, and he told me in Gaelic.
What's that sound like?
And then I went,
sounds so gentle.
Excuse me? And he point. Well, we were in a museum. He pointed to the sign, and went, I was like, oh. I'm a foreigner now.
You should have, like, busted out the Indiana Jones, like, tapestry, you know.
Tapestries. I thought you were going to say, it belongs in the museum.
No.
Tis in the museum, sir.
Tis in the museum.
This is a museum.
You're in a museum.
Man. You know what I think is great about Jim Henson? It's like, a lot of times my favorite characters are the ones in the background. Like, Oscar's worm, Slimy.
Like, yeah.
How much do you love Slimy?
Yeah.
And it's just basically like a pipe cleaner on two rods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just move around, and that's.
But he has so much like gravity. He has gravitas. He's got some emotion to him, which is great.
I don't know. I think like a lot of my favorite characters aren't necessarily like the mainstream ones. Like, I really liked the Count as a kid, like on Sesame Street. So, like, yes, the Count on. And.
Count
you know.
Was cool. Count scared the hell out of me when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I remember we used to listen, and maybe it's on that DVD or whatever you're talking about, is like, there was like the rock around the clock or whatever.
Yeah, that was a separate
We must
tape.
Have watched that tape like
I did
a
not save
thousand
that tape.
Times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, I remember there's videos of us.
Because there's
like
the
kids.
Honkers. The Honkers
yeah,
were
the
on
honkers,
that one.
Right. But it's just like, so much of that stuff, like, I forget, and it's just like, and then like, that comes back on, and it immediately like, brings me back. Like, somebody had put on, it was on Facebook, or it floated around somewhere. It's like, Ernie sings a song about like going to the moon, but he doesn't want to live there.
Yeah,
oh, God, on the moon.
Yeah. Like,
three of that
tugs at my heartstrings, man. It's just like, that was like a song from my childhood.
Yeah, he had I want to say not Wynton Marsalis. No, those are Vandross. Who's the soul singer with the big spot on his face?
Oh, that I'm not that into soul. I don't know.
Oh, it's gonna drive me crazy. If you know, please leave a comment. But he sang it. He's the guy that goes, hard to live on the moon.
Yeah.
He's like this giant guy, and he sang it with Ernie, and it's very, very, very sad. The saddest song I can think of is Gonzo and the Muppet Movie. When he sings, I'm going to go back there someday. I made a playlist of the saddest songs ever. And
of course you did.
Yeah, because I struggle with depression. But I made like a 30-song playlist, and that is in the middle of it.
That's awesome.
So it's like with that chromatic harmonica.
Yeah.
It's just they could do that. They, you know, it never seems sappy. If the Looney Tunes characters try to do that, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
No,
like if Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck got
are too manic. They're too manic.
They're all about the joke.
And I think
I love Looney Tunes, but it's about that energy and that joke.
Yeah, the Muppets have this whole spectrum where they can display different emotions, where like other mediums, like Looney Tunes, they just can't do that.
I mean, yeah, Sesame Street did that when it was, I forget what year it was, but when Mr. Hooper died.
Oh,
and they told Big Bird. They had to explain to Big Bird.
How fucked up is that?
Well, that's perfect.
But they did it so well.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying is, it's like, it's awesome that they take the time. They don't pull their punches. It's like they do real shit on the show.
But you know what? Ben's 7 years old, and I have had that talk with him 3 times because people in the family have died.
And kids don't get it. They don't have a frame of reference.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's great about Jim Henson is that he's helping kids not only learn like numbers, shapes, colors, things like that. Like the emotional piece too. I think it's just good. Well, this might. You know, mental health, you know, background coming up. But I think it's cool because a lot of kids, they don't have parents to walk them through that. But they can remember, oh, yeah, Mr. Hooper died and Big Bird was really sad.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm going through.
And I mean, that's how the scene was. It was the Thanksgiving Day episode in 1983.
Have
that written
notes.
Down. And, you know, he sort of walks into the store and he's looking for Mr. Hooper and he can't find him. And so then he's asking all these questions to the adults because I think Big Bird is the character description. I think he's supposed to have like the mentality of a 6-year old. You know, he's a very young.
Yeah, you're he's a young to see the world he's through big, right. eyes.
But he's very young, and so he's sort of asking all these questions, and finally he comes to understand the finality of death. And it's like, yeah, that's super heavy, but I mean, it needs to be done. It's and I think it's just a great way that they go about it.
Yeah. What are some other tidbits you picked up at the archives?
Oh, I picked up all kinds of tidbits. I mean, you know, so one of the cool things is just sort of how, like, the ideas evolved throughout. So, you know how I was talking about Cookie Monster earlier? Well, Cookie Monster wasn't the first Muppet that sort of devoured everything in sight. The first Muppet that devoured everything in sight was called Yorick, and it was the Skull Muppet. Right. And it was from the original, the very first show that... that Jim did, which was Sam and Friends, which was aired locally in D.C.
It was like a really hard head. It just had a hinge.
Yeah. And so, you know, so Yorick, you know, you could kind of see that as being sort of an evolution, you know, him evolving into Cookie Monster in a way. And I think there was something else about Sam and Friends. One of the other, like, original Muppets, I mean, Kermit ended up a little bit at the in Sam and Friends, I think. But I mean, and just the other interesting things you kind of forget that Jim Henson did. So there was Timepiece, which was a short film. Was it called Timepiece?
I think it was called Timepiece. Yeah, yeah, his experimental. It was right. It was like his film school.
Yeah, it was sort of like this stream of consciousness short film, and it was actually nominated for an Oscar in 1966. It was made in 65. And I got to watch that, and it was like, it's unusual, but it was like really interesting, the different like techniques that he used. And
yeah, I think it's on YouTube. I finally saw it online somewhere.
Wasn't it at that exhibit? I thought we saw it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because I remember watching it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, that's just sort of one of the interesting things. And of course, Fraggle Rock was great because that was, you know, Jim's sort of attempt to... The idea behind that show was really great. Because,
wasn't it supposed to deal with, like, racism?
It was supposed to deal with, like, sort of acceptance.
Between the Doozers and the Gorgs and the Fraggles.
Right, yeah. And so it was this idea of coexistence and, you know.
The thing that drove me crazy about Fraggle Rock, and it still does, is that, so the Fraggles have a hole under Doc's house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go through their tunnels, and then they come up on the other side, and there's giant monster trolls that live there. Doesn't that mean that the trolls live behind Doc? And they're just like Doc's horrible neighbors. He's like, right? Will you guys stop eating all those turnips?
No, I kind of took it as like they go...
They're a dimensional barrier?
Yeah. I kind of figured like they're going into another world. Kind of like the Closet of Narnia, if you will.
Yeah.
Like you're traveling elsewhere through the Fraggle tunnels because they're somehow magical.
Okay. Another space and time.
I just never got past it. It's like Inspector Gadget. Even though, like, Inspector Gadget came on when I was, like, 10. And I was young enough to know Inspector Gadget, but I'm just like, is he a cyborg? Is he a robot? I was like, was he in some horrible accident? Right. How can he do that?
John wanted the origin story.
Yeah, it's obviously not. It's like, I kept thinking of, like, an Iron Man thing. I'm like, is it all in the trench coat? Is he tucked up in the trench coat? He's got, no, but there goes his head.
Right.
It was like some things, like some suspension of disbelief I can't cross.
Yeah.
But I think now is the time to discuss Steven's real thoughts on the Dark Crystal.
And after that, can we discuss Prairie Dawn for David?
Okay. Oh,
I don't even know what Prairie Dawn is.
No, you know Prairie Dawn.
Do I?
You know Prairie Dawn.
Let's go around the room, man. Instead of Greatest Thing in the World, because we're at 53 minutes, instead of recommendations, let's talk about the thing we hate most about the Muppets.
Ooh, I don't even know.
If it's that.
Straight up.
Well, if it is Prairie Dawn, I don't know how. All right, now what's the problem with Dark Crystal?
All right, this is a movie for fucking children. All right, and the fucking monsters in this movie with their little bird necks and their little chip, chip, chipping and that like chanting, that's some fucked up things to show to a kid. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I was exposed to that too early. I can't watch that show.
Because it's
like,
terrifying.
It's fucking terrifying. And there's that little weird little boy. It's like, fuck that movie.
The Jim Henson biography has like two whole chapters about Dark Crystal and what went wrong.
Yeah, so a lot. You really like, enjoy we shouldn't that. Have fucking made it happen.
I will say, I'm not going to defend Dark Crystal. Renee told me not to show it to the kids. To the children.
Exactly. See, Renee's like a good mom who's protecting her children from some horrible shit Jim Henson was doing. Where was he in his life that he did this? Is he getting divorced?
I think
did he have cancer?
You can show it to kids when they get to high school and they're going through their emo phase.
I think that's the appropriate time to show them that.
Yeah.
I will.
Which is like some dark shit in that movie.
I will defend Labyrinth. in the same
Labyrinth isn't as bad. It's not great.
Well, I defend it in the same way I defend Batman Returns, because it's a total mess, but the ingredients in it are all kind of awesome. They just won't come together.
It's not working right.
No, because Labyrinth, the thing I love about Labyrinth is it is produced by George Lucas, directed by Jim Henson, written by Terry Jones of Monty Python, and starring David Bowie. And at alternate 5 minutes, it is one of their movies.
Right.
It's like a Star Wars movie for 5 minutes. Then a Muppet comes out and starts doing a Monty Python sketch. It's like that worm in the beginning. It's like, just a worm. and then David Bowie comes on. And it's a David Bowie video for 5 minutes. I'm walking on the walls. And now I'm leaving. And now it's a Muppet movie. And the movie is just... It's
a hot mess.
It has everything I like. And none of them are working together at all.
And of course, the very young Jennifer Connelly.
And a very young Jennifer Connelly, who I remember telling my friend. I remember telling my friend at the time, I was like, she's going to grow up to be really pretty. And he's like, you're sick.
You know,
same thing about Natalie Portman in The Professional. I'm like, that's going to be a really pretty woman. Why are you saying that about a little girl?
An interesting thing in the archives that I, you know, sort of stumbled upon, because every now and then when I was there, you know, I'd be doing my work and then I would finish a project I had worked on, and then Karen would say, like, oh, just, you know, go wander around in the archive room over there and just learn something. And I was like, okay, so that'd be cool. So I was, you know, would stumble upon, like, I stumbled at one point upon some headshots for people that auditioned for that role in Labyrinth. And so it's, like, these really young pictures of, like, Sarah Jessica Parker, Jane Krasinski.
For the girl.
Yeah, for the girl, Jennifer Connelly.
You mean a pony picture of
Sarah Jessica Parker? And all of these, like, big-name actresses, and it's, like, them is, you know, they're, like, what, 12 or something?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is so weird. Like, this is what they looked like as a kid. And that's, I mean, it's their headshot.
It's a professional headshot.
For one second, I thought you were going to say, the other people who auditioned for the Goblin King? Tim Curry.
Tim Curry.
And I was going to be like, oh, it's all full circle. Because you could have seen Tim Curry playing the Goblin King.
Yeah. That would have been great. Oh.
So what's the Prairie Dawn issue?
Prairie
Dawn. I hate her.
I don't even know who this is.
No,
she
you
hung
do.
Around, you do. You
no,
do.
Okay, Prairie
she
Dawn.
She was in Sesame Street in the 70s, and then she disappeared, and then they brought her back.
She, for reasons passing understanding, she is a foul little thing.
Wait, hang on a second. Is she a real person?
No, she's a Muppet. She's a Muppet. Person Muppet.
She's a Muppet on Sesame Street.
Yeah, so
she's like purple.
She's one of the...
Blonde?
She's pink, and she's got, like, this dirty blonde hair that's just hideous.
She moves her head like this.
She has this voice. Band?
No, she's not in the band.
Janice is outstanding. Janice is one of the greatest Muppets.
Google it.
Janice is like the transgendered Muppet.
Yeah.
That's what I decided years ago.
Oh,
like,
she totally
Janice
is
cool because she's a trans.
She says some awkward
Janice
things
Janice talks
that I
about
love.
Being on a nude beach in Great Muppet Caper.
Yes.
She's supposed to be the flower child. Like, that's what her description said.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know. I'm like, can we find, like, Janice's character description? Because I honestly don't know if it's a man or a woman. But I think it would be cool if they want to go with sexuality issues, they can use Janice, right? And David's like, no, it's a girl. Here's her character description.
Yeah.
Like, no, she had an Prairie abusive Dawn. Relationship or something that she left. Or like...
They write all that stuff down?
Yes! That's what I'm saying. It's not G-rated.
When
like,
they were
the character
working on the pitch.
Descriptions are PG-13. Yeah.
But Prairie Dawn, so she's this tiny little thing. She's a pink Muppet. She's got, like, this dirty blonde hair. She wears this stupid blue dress with daisies on it.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. She, like, bounces around all the time.
She is bossy, and she is really irritating, and I can't stand her. Her voice, it's just
Oh yeah, fuck that Muppet.
Yeah. Right? Prairie Dawn.
We are looking this up. Here is a picture of okay. Wait. Oh man, I just
You know, I think the sort of the genesis of my hatred for Prairie Dawn, it had to have stemmed from a scene in which she was she bossed everybody around all the time because that's what she did. She was a control freak. But she
has a little OCD, I feel.
Without a doubt.
She gets very excited very quickly.
I really think
Here's
that
a picture
there was
of her
time...
torturing some fish.
She's right? a prima donna. Yeah.
She's over a fishbowl and telling them what to
she's
do.
Horrible. Look at that stupid hat she's wearing.
Look at that. There she is with Cookie Monster.
So tell the
and
Genesis story.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's that right there. Okay. She's telling Cookie Monster he can't eat cookies.
So she got all up in Cookie Monster's business.
Yeah, and she's like, you can't eat cookies. And it's like, back off, lady.
I eat cookies. That's what I do.
Back
Cookie Monster.
Up off it, all right?
It's in my name.
Ugh, I hate Prairie Dawn.
Lisa, what do you hate about the Muppets?
All right, well, I had to think a minute because I just love everything Jim Henson except Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, I just can't get into that stuff. What I hate was Elmo. I really have, like, it's now, it should just be called the Elmo Show, because I don't know if anyone's seen Sesame Street. Like, I watched a new episode, like, last year, and I was like, what the hell? Like, Bert and Ernie are cartoons. They're, like, drawn. They're not
claymation.
Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, what happened to Sesame Street? And the genesis for this is, like, roundabouts 1997, 96.
Tickle Me Elmo.
Tickle Me Elmo. Yep. Ruined Elmo for
that
me.
That shit was
That's
everywhere.
In the book as well.
I liked Elmo before that because it was moderation. You saw Grover. You got to see, like,
Elmo is the Wolverine of the Muppets.
Yes, he is. Because you know what happened? Like, remember those two? They were twins. They were purple monsters, and one had, they had horns.
The two-headed monster.
The two-headed monster. Like, you don't see those guys anymore. You don't get to see,
And you know why?
The Yip Yips. Where are the Yip Yips? Come on.
I love the Yip Yips.
Everybody's been overshadowed by Elmo.
The two-headed monster, both those guys are dead.
That I know. Yeah. But, I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, there were great characters.
If you watch The Muppet Family Christmas, which I'm willing to put on after we stop recording this, in June. Elmo is in it, and he's just another monster. It's like Cookie Monster and Harry and Elmo. He was around for a while.
He was just another monster until
Kevin Clash
showed up and gave him the voice. And it's like that changed it. Kevin Clash, like, I mean, defined Elmo.
Yeah. And I do want to watch the documentary.
Yeah.
He was acquitted of all charges, but I don't think they're going
to... There's no way to come back from the PR. He was accused of...
basically what Bryan Singer's accused of now.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's not good for him.
And yeah, he was acquitted, but like, there's no way they can recover from that PR thing.
Oh, yeah. Just
gonna be like, and he was like a head producer. He was like running Elmo's World. He was like one of the guys in charge of Sesame Street. He wasn't just doing the character.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And they have somebody else doing Elmo.
Yeah.
Because you can't lose Elmo.
And whoever's doing the count right now, you need to work on that, because that's not working for
your
me.
Your count
either.
Isn't up your to count, Lisa's standards.
Your count
well,
sucks.
That reminds me, I may have said this, talked about this story on the show before, but the thing, I love the count. I think the count's hilarious. They used to have a segment of TV parodies where the count would only watch shows that were numbers.
Yep.
And he would watch 60 Minutes or 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
Or Party of Five. Like, that's all he would watch. And then they would do parodies over. He's like, my favorite show. But the first appearance of the count is the most terrifying thing I ever saw. And I found it on YouTube, and I have posted this on Facebook before. But it was a sketch where Ernie's really, really proud. No, Bert is really proud that he made a pyramid of 6 blocks because it's Sesame Street. He's like, look at my pyramid of 6 blocks. And he goes, oh, that's great. And he goes, and he tells Ernie, you watch this. I got to go off screen for some reason. And he goes away, and the count comes in, and they play this creepy gothic music, and he's got the cape over his nose.
Yeah.
He's Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
And he's like, I am the count. And he's like, I want to count things. He's like, I want to count this pyramid. And Ernie's like, no, don't touch that, because Bert told me don't touch it. And the count goes, wah! And Ernie is paralyzed by the count's, like, vision. And he does this face, which scared the shit out of me. And then he counts all the blocks and he messes them up. And he goes away, and then when Ernie comes to, he's like completely destroyed. He's like, the pyramid, the pyramid. And then it like cut on that. And then they went to like the letter P, and I'm like, what the hell?
What happened? And there's no resolution.
Then they come back to it, and Bert is yelling at Ernie, and he's like, what the fuck did you do to my pyramid?
With that
like,
eyebrow.
You had one job, you had one job, striped shirt. And then the count comes back, and he's like, I'm sorry, I ruined your pyramid. And they do not know who the count is.
Yeah.
And they treat him like that. They're just like, I don't know who you are.
We don't talk to strangers.
You can't come here messing up pyramids. And they're in that background where it's just the blue background and the wall. They're not even on Sesame Street, so you're in this familiar, unfamiliar limbo. So where you're like, there's a moment where you're like, he could just bite both of them. Yeah. And kill Ernie and Bert. And then he counts it twice, so he messes it up and leaves. And that's like, that's his first appearance. And it scared the hell out of me. Oh, and when he counts them, they're like, just stay away from the blocks. And he goes, bah! And he paralyzes both of them in the same way.
I'll have to look this up. I don't know if I've seen it. I know you've read the story.
It's on YouTube.
Okay.
But I had a dream that night that count went down Sesame Street and turned all the Muppets into vampires.
Oh.
And the dream was so vivid that it was one of those, they cut to the dots, you know, they used to count the dots, dots, but it was all Muppet vampire heads, and they were all going, with fangs like Oscar vampire and Grover vampire, and I will never, ever get over that.
I'll never forgive the count.
I love the count. I've forgiven the count. I will not forgive that incident.
Why? Well, I just, when you mentioned Bert and Ernie, that just reminded me, like, I love how modern they are, because what was that thing with Twitter? They had, like, Bert and Ernie come out as like gay on Twitter,
yeah,
and just wait, to like support gay.
Did they actually do that, or because I've seen a lot of parody?
Do you remember that? Because it was around the time you were working there.
No, I don't remember exactly. I mean,
they made like from some what I kind remember, of the statement.
The company line was like, "Bert and Ernie aren't gay; they're puppets. Like they don't have sexuality.
they don't have legs.
Yeah, they don't have legs. They don't exist below the waist." But I don't remember that exactly. Someone, I mean, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, because the joke, be the old joke going around was that Bert and Ernie are roommates, so they're gay, and I have it on a T-shirt, which I did not wear today. But they made some kind of
that's not a ambiguous,
right?
No, they made some kind of ambiguous statement that said something. They commented somehow on their relationship. I forget what it was, but really? It was. They released it on Twitter, which is why I love, like, just the playfulness of Jim Henson. Mm-hmm. Like, the Muppets will just take over Twitter. Like, the count says.
And that's like, that's the thing I love about Henson. It seems like he was the only one of the 60s that took the hippie ideal and made it work. And made it work through the decades.
Mainstream,
because
yeah.
You see all, you know, when you go back and look at the 60s, by 69, 70, it all implodes. Like, you know, everybody, you know, it turns into selfishness. And basically the drugs wear off or they become addicted.
And everything people try to levitate the Pentagon.
Yeah, the Beatles break up in that time. But Henson manages to just go, all right, we're going to do a kid show. And the company wasn't like, he didn't form the company to do a show. Like, he just kept... He just kept generating ideas for these people to work. It was like an artist colony.
Well, I heard originally he didn't want to do kids shows. He wanted to do like Avenue Q type stuff, mm-hmm. where he wanted to use puppets for adult entertainment.
And that's what the Muppet Show was. That's what the Muppet Show was supposed to be.
Yeah, and he just kind of fell into Sesame Street.
Yeah, because Sesame Street sounded like such a good idea that he wanted to do it. And the Muppet Show was supposed to be a reaction against that, which is why the Muppet pilot. Which is on the DVD, but I first saw it when I worked in the Museum of Television Radio. It's called The Muppets Present Sex and Violence.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
That is the best face I've ever seen Stephen make.
This is all new information.
We're over an hour talking about Muppets. We could keep going, but I think we'll wrap it up. This has been awesome. David, thanks for coming over.
Thank you for having me.
Those were really cool stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody kind of had some really cool personal story about it. Lisa, how do we find you?
You can find me every other Saturday at 19 South LaGrange Road.
Woo-woo! Get the fuck out of the way.
Are you using your Twitter feed or?
No, I haven't gone. I'm working crazy hours, so mm-hmm. No, in person's the best because half the time my phone's dead or you know, I'm not on Facebook.
David?
So. I can be found in Washington, D.C.
In our nation's capital.
In our nation's capital.
There are like no plugs. You can find me on Twitter at Not On My Book. That's where we post things about the show. Thanks for, you know what? Thank you guys for liking the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. We've grown really quickly over the last few months. And as I always say, my favorite thing in the world is to go on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page and see people have liked it. And I don't know who they are.
I'll give us a like just to make you smile.
Oh, you don't like it already?
Yeah, even I like it.
Come on. I think I might, rude but much? I can put like little
you've
comments.
You've been on it four times. Like it.
Seriously. Get it together.
I don't know.
Stephen.
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!